This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Connect with Otupote's wild places, wild weather and unique wildlife. April 19th to 28th at Wild Dunedin, New Zealand's Festival of Nature. Experience the magic of nature through more than 140 events, many that are family friendly, free or low cost. Explore wilddunedin.nz and the printed programs around the city to plan your Wild Dunedin 2024. And follow New Zealand Festival of Nature on Facebook for updates. Let's hear about how you can discover and explore the unique wild nature of our city.
Well, journalist, editor and writer Paul Gorman has dabbled in weather forecasting since he was age seven. He's worked for the Met Service, Weather Watch, Blue Skies Weather. He's written about it. He's talked about it, no doubt, and many other things in an extensive 30-plus career, writing about science, weather, the environment and more. As part of Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature, Paul is going to be presenting or co-presenting a session called Fire, Clouds and Local Weather at the Barclay Theatre at Te Huru Otago Museum on the 26th of April. He'll be joined by James Knapp from Fire and Emergency New Zealand. We thought we'd take a moment to get to know Paul and to get some idea of what might be inspiring his presentation on the 26th. Kia ora, good to have you with us, Paul. Thanks for coming in.
Kia ora, Jeff. Thank you.
So I mentioned there that for you, weather was a fascination from an early age. How and why?
Yeah, very early. I seem to remember I might have been about 6 years old, possibly, at primary school, and one of the tasks of the day was to do the weather chart. And I was just fascinated at that age about all the different kinds of weather, like sun, fog, wind, snow. And it was just that, I don't know, just there was always doing something different. And this was in the UK. And I think we had a couple of really snowy winters, and I really enjoyed, you know, snow and the cold weather. And I've always been fascinated since then. I can't understand why people don't look up more. I'm always looking up to see what's going on, you know. And there's this whole kind of backdrop to our lives that not a lot of people actually stop or have the time to look at, you know. But most days for me, you know, it's always checking the weather forecasts, looking at weather maps, satellite pictures, seeing what's going on, and trying to sort of almost keep the forecasters honest, because I feel like, you know, after so many years watching it, you know, it's like someone who goes to sea all the time, they have a really good sense of what the weather's doing. And so I'm always sort of interested to see how well the forecasters do, and especially in a place like Dunedin. I mean, this has got to be the toughest part of the country to predict, I reckon. Yeah.
And of course, the technology has changed so much around that. I have a sense, just as someone who's not, you know, particularly aware of all of this, I have a sense that forecasting and so forth, technology tends to have improved. We can be a little bit more confident more days out about what's coming. Would you agree?
Definitely. I think forecasting is, I think they normally say about 85% accurate. It's hard to know exactly what they're measuring when they say that, but they're pretty good generally. But the nuances of things, you know, are often lost. You know, a forecast of, you know, cloud increasing and patchy rain from afternoon doesn't necessarily give a really good impression of what's going to happen. Certainly when I worked for the Met Service, I mean, that was kind of in the mid to late 80s, that was the end of the lighthouse observing network, the people on the ground everywhere. That was when all the automatic weather stations came in. And there was a feeling then that the forecasts would suffer. And they may have done a little bit to start with, but I mean, you know, technology is so amazing these days, you know. And there are plenty of people who can use that technology to get in touch with Met Service or whoever and say, actually, it's not snowing. You know, so that's given, you know, room for feedback as well.
You've touched on something, I don't know whether this is the right word, but the kind of the romance of it, the romance of being an individual who's really attuned to these things. And it might be, you know, your grandmother says, you know, whenever there's a front coming, my knees start to stiffen up, or whatever it might be. You know, there's you know, soothsayer element to it.
Yeah.
Is it the science of weather that intrigues you, or is it more Is there more to that? Is there an element to
it's, it's both. I love the kind of built experience of so many years of watching the weather. And I always remember, you know, the ODT years ago when I first came to Dunedin, one of the execs there who was interested in weather too, and he knew it was about to start raining because the seagulls basically came down. And I watched that one and I thought, actually, that's pretty true. You know, that's pretty good. But I do like the science of it too. I mean, meteorology is an incredibly complex science. And, you know, my maths was nowhere near good enough to actually major in that at university. But I still understand that, you know, that the sort of the physics that, you know, that run the atmosphere is just incredibly complicated. These amazing models that use all of this stuff to come up with a, you know, mostly fine at the end of it, you know. Yeah. I think it's just the fact it's always doing something, and whatever else might be going on in your life, you know, good or bad or whatever, the weather is always interesting. Yeah.
All right. So there you are as a younger person, just naturally finding yourself curious about these things. How did you continue to educate yourself about weather?
I suppose I just watched it, collected weather maps to my parents' distress, I think. I've still got folders full of weather maps cut out from newspapers.
Really?
I used to go up to the Met office when I was a high school student in Christchurch, and they'd give me old maps and things, and did a geography degree, did some meteorology in that, and joined the Met service. But my maths wasn't good enough, so I ended up thinking maybe I should be writing, doing science journalism, because science, I'm interested in the whole, you know, science generally, and there's a real sort of lack of science journalists. So then did a postgrad in journalism and started writing about science, really. You know, it's not the only thing I've written about, but it's actually great to be able to have that stand to one side a little bit, you know, and report on the weather. And the ODT is such a – I mean, people in the South love anything to do with the weather, you know, and a feared chief reporter when I was there, Clark Isaacs, you know, when I started, you know, he would come in from lunch and there'd be a shower and he'd say, bit of rain out there, weather story, Gorman, weather story. You know, like there was no other places I've worked, you'd really have to twist their arm to be able to write a story about something. But the ODT just loved their weather stories. So I think that really kind of, you know, helped. Yeah, so I mean, just constant. And I've still got these weather maps at home. I don't know what I'm going to do with them. But.
And now, of course, we can't talk about weather without talking about climate, without talking about change, right? Yeah. Or can we?
Well, I was thinking about this morning. I mean, this is not the right way of putting it, that weather gets a bad rap. But, I mean, climate change is really scary and the weather is changing. But there's so much doom and gloom associated with that whole area now that sometimes it's nice just to appreciate the weather on its own merits. You know, like, wow, look at that sunset, or here comes a big southerly, you know, or God, that fog was really thick, you know. But, I mean, of course, they're inextricably linked. It's quite funny, you know, I feel like for many years I was writing about the weather and climate stuff when no one was really interested, especially climate. And yet now everyone is writing about it. And, I mean, it is a huge concern. Yeah, it's a massive concern, yeah.
So you've been attuned to local change?
I suppose I've seen the weather change. You mean like over sort of decade or whatever, just looking back? And certainly, like, I mean, I live in Christchurch now, you know, and we haven't had a decent snowfall on the ground in the city for about 12 years. Whereas before that, you know, we were probably getting not quite as much as Dunedin, but every 2 or 3 years you get a reasonable dump of snow. The frosty mornings aren't quite what I remember, you know, but then is that just rose-tinted spectacles? I'm not sure. But Dunedin too, like I can remember coming out of covering city council meetings midwinter, standing on the steps of the municipal chambers, you know, and it would be fog or drizzle and about 4 or 5 degrees and it was just so cold and raw. And that was in the early 90s. And when I came back here to do a stint back at the ADT. The weather was not as bad as I remembered it. So, yeah, definitely I've noticed change, yeah.
With Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature, you know, there is a focus on weather. Weather will come up as part of a conversation, I'm sure, across many presentations and workshops and so forth, from gardening to tourist-related activity and so forth. And as you said before, it's not necessary to connect that with a negative experience. And we here in the South seem to, I don't know, celebrate in a way some of the extremes that the weather can throw at us, and what it can help create in terms of mood and environment, right? And that's very much part of what this festival's about.
Yeah, yeah. Something I noticed almost from, you know, day one moving to Dunedin was someone saying to me, the weather isn't as bad here as people make out. It's almost like that, a slight sort of sense of awareness that maybe it is. Well, you know, I don't know what the word is for it, but sort of almost defensive, you know. You know, I really like the sort of the changeability here, but I would have to say that the weather down here is maybe more extreme than other parts of the country. You know, certainly the temperatures, it's certainly quite a different weather in Dunedin to Christchurch. I always thought it would be a little bit like Christchurch, but just a couple of degrees cooler. But it's so much more complicated this far south. You know, you're really into those roaring 40 westerlies. And, I mean, you notice it when you drive south from Christchurch. You know, the weather, if it hasn't changed by the time you got to Oamaru, it's changed by the time you get to Waikawaiti, or it changes at Waitati, you know. And the cloud seems to sort of just sit over Dunedin, and you're really into a different world of weather, you know. It's
And indeed, no doubt, you're observing the impact of those weather systems on the physical environment. If you're out on the Otago Peninsula, for example, and you see the trees that
I know
grow on one side only.
That's amazing, isn't it? You see them leaning towards the east, and they're so used to the westerlies that if you get an easterly, they get blown over because they can't cope with it. You know, it's a different environment, that's for sure.
You've been asked to give a presentation, and it's titled Fire, Clouds and Local Weather, and you won't be doing this alone. As I said before, you'll be joined by James Knapp from Fire and Emergency New Zealand for that presentation. I know you're at the moment in rolling the wrist around in your mind and thinking, what might you touch on? What might you touch on?
I think I've probably just given my talk. there's a few things I'd like I've got some great slides. I'd just like to share some amazing kind of cloudscapes and interesting little bits and pieces about the weather. I want it to be quite lighthearted. As I say, there's a lot of, you know, necessary doom and gloom about climate. And I'd really like to just sort of talk, you know, about the weather. But there's a couple of things I'd like to sort of maybe broach with the audience, just get their opinion on forecasting in this part of the world, like whether they're happy with it or whether they think, you know, it's could do better. But still going through the process.
What might be the result of some feedback in that area? I mean, can we change the way that weather is reported in an area? I mean, are we being shortchanged in any way, do you think?
No, I don't think so. But I think, like, with a lot of things that come out of Wellington, probably the further you get from Wellington, and Met Service is based in Wellington. I mean, I think they do a very good job for Christchurch, but I know, you know, Dunedin is that little step further on, and the forecasting here isn't necessarily quite as accurate as it is further north. But of course, we've got a weather radar here now, which really helps. I mean, that has made a huge difference. Interesting story. I was going to mention this at the talk, but the Met Service put out these severe thunderstorm warnings or outlooks and watches each day. And the first day that the Dunedin radar was running, they saw that storms that they would not have previously seen were actually heading for Dunedin. So they updated the severe thunderstorm forecast in the evening to account for that. And so that's a sign that, you know, in the past, there are probably things that were missed that now they can see. But I think Met Service and others are very open to feedback if it's positive and, you know, constructive. And as I said, I mean, that's a pretty good thing about social media, anything like that. You know, you can send in a photo and say, hey, it's not raining, you know.
Because it's adding to a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Helps
yeah.
them understand what's
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you can't possibly, I mean, it's the most difficult job in the world. You know, I mean, predicting the future, who can do that? And yet you're expected to do it, you know, as a forecaster. So I have a lot of admiration for weather forecasters. It's not an easy job at all. And, you know, the number of people, I mean, I'm always interested in people's perception of the forecast as well. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's supposed to rain all day, and yet the forecast was for scattered afternoon showers. And so that's not what was said, but, you know, people, the way they perceive things.
Mm.
And so often that is a problem as much as whether the forecast is, you know, on par or not.
And one person's forecast might be positive news to oh. another's
yeah,
negative
yeah.
news. It's more than about what you put on when you go to the house.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because something that irks me a bit is the kind of the daily sort of like racing, you know, sort of stakes as to who got the highest temperature. I mean, you know, with climate change, you know, hotter summers, we shouldn't actually be proud of the fact that, hey, and so-and-so got to 35 degrees today. I mean, that's going to happen more and more, and that is not necessarily a good thing. That's one that still puzzles me a little bit about how you're the best if you've got the highest temperature, you know.
And we talk about bad weather. You know, what is bad weather?
Well, exactly, or nice weather. Or,
yeah. It's an interesting one. I'm absolutely sure that those in attendance will have all their own views about it too. So you're probably going to have quite a bit of interaction, I imagine,
yeah,
from people in the audience
good.
who might be like you, have just always had a lifelong fascination. How will you feel, do you think, Paul, if, you know, in another 10 years' time, everything that's coming out of Met Service is 100% accurate and you can't challenge them anymore?
Oh, well, it's unlikely that they'll ever get it spot on. I mean, you just can't, you know, that's beyond. Well, I mean, some of the modelling, you know, that they're using is incredible, but you've still got the interpretation. And I still think that, you know, your eyes on the ground are a really important part of that. I think it's really important to have the most accurate forecasts you can.
Well, that session again, once more, is on Friday the 26th of April at the Barclay Theatre at Tūhura Otago Museum. It is a free session, but you should book your spot because, as we've said with many of these events, as part of Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature, they will book out. Wilddunedin.nz is the place to go. Paul, I don't know whether you've had an opportunity to look at the program more widely, but might you take an opportunity while you're in town to check out some of the other events, do you
I'd
think?
I'd like to. Yeah, I've probably got to write about them as well, I think.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. We look forward to that as well. Thanks so much for taking some time just to give us a bit of a snapshot about who you are and what you might touch on at this special session as part of the festival. And we look forward, of course, to talking with further guests as we get closer to Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature.
Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature launches on April 19th. Experience the magic of nature through more than 140 events, many that are family-friendly, free or low-cost. Discover Otipoti's magnificent wild places, wild weather and unique wildlife. Celebrate the people doing important work to protect our natural environment. April 19th to 28th at Wild Dunedin New Zealand Festival of Nature. Don't miss out. Book your place at wilddunedin.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.